Forever Dog.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast.
Scary stories to tell on the pod. It typically is a podcast about scary stories, urban legends, and spooky things you tell us about. But in Fridays thus far this summer, we have been revisiting the extensive and tremendous filmography of legendary filmmaker Stephen Sommers in a little series we like to call
Summer of Summers.
Is everyone confused? Good.
Please continue to not vote on which one we should call it. This is the last installment, so there's still 80 years left.
Yes, Anna, I can't believe we've done it.
It's a crying shame, a genuine textbook crying shame that there are not more.
I guess without further ado, we should just say that this film is the 2014 classic Odd Thomas.
Andrew, I gotta be honest with you. I was not looking forward to watching this.
I feel the same way.
Because it's not The Mummy and I want it to be.
Right.
But I'm so glad that I did. I really enjoyed this movie.
I'll give it away right here.
Okay, good. We haven't fully spoken yet about it.
No. We watched this separately. I am electrified by the fact that we both enjoyed it. I found it like this is a great Saturday afternoon film.
This is a great Saturday afternoon film. This is a great Tuesday evening film. This is a great Friday evening film if it's Friday when you're listening to it. It's a good sit down and watch it with your person or with a group or by yourself. This is a good, if you like to, don't plug it into the adapter so you don't get electrocuted. But if you like to bring a laptop and take a bath, this is a good laptop bath movie.
Keep it on a stool unplugged.
As we say for everything. Especially laptops playing Odd Thomas.
An open faced sandwich. Keep it on a stool unplugged. Don't plug it in. Open faced sandwich.
There's no reason to do that. It doesn't need power. It's just a sandwich.
And Anna, okay. So, Cliff's notes of this movie. This is based on a Dean Koontz novel.
Everyone keep your bras on. Don't throw them all at once.
You're not graduating from bra university. You cannot be throwing your bras up in the air.
Put the tassel on the other titty.
So Dean Koontz. I just said Dean Koontz.
And Dean Koontz is a different man. He is not literate.
No. And Dean, coot is a word for like a wily old man. When that becomes plural, it becomes the most hateful sounding word I've ever heard in my life.
Koontz. It's wild.
But Dean Koontz. I just did it again.
Andrew, look, here's the thing. You're only ever going to be able to call him Dean Koontz. And I think that we both, the sooner we accept that, the better both of our lives will be.
Wow. I am awash in Greb at the moment.
He's big Greb vibes.
This is big Greb vibes. So this author, Dean, we know of him.
This author, Dean.
We know of him from his many like paperback books, normally appealing to like teens, kind of like teen thrillers.
It's so funny. I thought he was like a Dan Patterson kind of guy. I didn't know that he was a teen author.
Interesting. And now I'm looking it up and I think actually, Anna, you're right. Like, I think he is more of a, but I feel like
it's Dean thrillers, horror, fantasy, suspense, science fiction, mystery, and satire.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's that I'm looking at, film adaptations. Wow.
Oh my God.
Why did I think he did stuff for teens?
The first thing that you get on Google, you know, like the auto-populated questions, first auto-populated question when you search Dean Koontz is Dean Koontz Stephen King? Would you like to know the answer?
I think it's no.
The answer is no. They're not the same person.
But this is wild because in my writer's room, someone was just talking about the movie Demon Seed, which is the first film adaptation of one of his books. And it's starring Julie Christie.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's about an evil baby.
Sure. Well, I saw a review that said that Odd Thomas was by far the best Dean Koontz book adaptation.
Yeah. How about that?
Very interesting.
It makes sense.
And he's on Twitter. Would you like to know what his handle is?
Please tell me.
It's at Dean Koontz.
He got it. He got it on the ground floor.
I don't know if he had to pay for it, but he got it.
Imagine being a monster and stealing Dean Koontz from right out under him.
Sorry, I didn't actually hear what you said because I'm on Dean Koontz's Twitter.
I'm no Anna. Listen, I think you're correct.
I almost
you were correct to
it.
Prioritize Dean Koontz's Twitter.
He tweeted about an odd the New York Times called Odd Thomas your most likable creation. Agree? A. I think my most likable creation is me. I'm very cuddly.
Wow.
Dean Koontz, please. I said it now. Would you like to know?
Accepted it.
It's too much. Would you like to know his Twitter bio? Guys, please. We'll get to the podcast in a second. Just let us say what Dean Koontz's Twitter bio is. It's, I live in Southern California with my wife, Gerda, our golden retriever, Elsa, and the enduring spirits of our goldens, Trixie and Anna.
Okay.
I didn't even know my name would be in it, but I just love, I live in Southern California with my wife, Gerda.
The goldens being a part of news.
It. What's the point of being a successful author if you can't have multiple goldens?
And calling them goldens.
Look, and Dean Koontz is looking good. Okay? It's fine. We got it. We got it all.
So this is a film, and this comes from our favorite book, Wikipedia. Odd Thomas is a psychic who lives in a small town in California. He describes his ability as, I see dead people, but then, by God, I do something about it.
Yes, he does say that in the movie.
It felt very human-sized, which maybe I also really liked. Maybe that's the reason I liked it.
Yeah, it felt – so did we describe the plot at all?
Just that Odd Thomas, that is his name, is he's a cook in a diner, but he works for the police in solving crimes because he can see ghosts.
And the ghosts tell him how they died.
But they can't talk.
They can't talk. They just touch and look and act.
Yes.
There's a lot of acting.
Whole lot of acting on the ghost's part. And sometimes the ghosts are kind of low key and quiet, and sometimes they're very loud and very scary.
Yes. And sometimes they're, spoiler alert, Shuler Hemsley.
Anna? Yes, that's it. Two ghosts, two nods to previous Stephen Sommers films. One of them is Shuler Hemsley. One is our friend Arnold Vosloo.
Wait, I was looking the whole movie. I saw him on IMDb and was like eagle-eyed. Find him.
He's the ghost with – remember there's the one scene where he like goes to the mall and he sees a ghost with an arm ripped off? And he's like, that was
that
my
was
old
him?
Teacher. That was Arnold Vosloo, Anna.
Oh, my God. I had no idea. It's so funny because he didn't talk, but in my mind he was American.
Yeah. He had one line. He had one single line and he was singing as he was in a car accident, which is what killed him. And
oh.
I believe the words he sang in what I think to be a clearly South African accent were such a beautiful girl. And then he got killed by a semi truck.
Oh, my God. And his arm was ripped off and he was using it to pick his nose and pretend jerk off a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
Which is great.
So fun to see Arnold Vosloo enjoy himself.
And also with his left arm severed at the bicep, which is a reference to the mummy.
The mummy, right. Wow. Yep. There's a lot of mummy references in this movie.
There's a lot of mummy references in this movie. The thing that I felt was a departure from the mummy and a lot of the other – something we talk about with Stephen Sommers is progressively more CGI at the time where CGI was still advancing and we didn't quite know when it was worth it to still do things practically.
Right.
But this movie did not have a ton of – or some of the – like the Ebert review and some other ones said that it was too much VFX. But I think because of budget and just like what you said, it's a human-sized story, there wasn't a ton of VFX. Like there were there were these evil sort of demon spirits called, what are they, Baldaks? Baldaks?
Yeah, something like, hold on, I'm looking it up now. They are called Baldaks.
Baldaks. I thought they looked good.
I did too. I really had no problem with the special effects in this movie. And I think maybe it's a sign of how dramatically the Marvel Cinematic Universe has impacted people's view on CGI. Because I'm like, this is not a lot of CGI.
You know? Right, right. That's true. I know. Yeah, it's mostly – so it's him and then his girlfriend. And what I thought was cool and a little bit – not to jump ahead, but a little bit of a queer narrative that I thought was nice is that – all of the important people in his life knew that he could see ghosts.
Yes. Yes. And they all believed him.
they all believed him and they valued it and they made room for it. So let's talk a little bit about the other characters in the movie. He's got a girlfriend named... What's her name?
He's got a girlfriend named Bronwyn, whose nickname is Stormy.
She goes by Stormy. And they are just great together. They have a great relationship.
Amazing chemistry.
Yeah, and like I thought it was really interesting. You don't see a ton of movies where it's just about two people dating.
Yeah.
And that's not the main issue. Like they're good. And they're facing, but they're not married and there's no kids involved. It's just about two people who are solidly together. And they both just help each other, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's definitely more his movie than hers, but she had plenty to do.
She really does in a way that like there's some kind of nods to her being like, his girl Friday. Like she's sort of like initially sort of just like a helpful girlfriend. But they really do give her a lot. She has an opinion. She stands up for herself and he respects her, which is huge.
I think a good way to tell if a female character is good is to ask yourself, would I want to play that character? And I think that most people would. Like she gets to be cool.
This cast is pretty stacked. Willem Dafoe is Wyatt Porter, the town's police chief. Who is
Police
very aware.
Chief Andrew. Police.
Anna, I don't know what's going on. Maybe I haven't drank enough water today.
You haven't drank enough water and Chris is out of town.
That's true.
T-minus 4 days?
This is T-minus four days.
T-plus 4 days?
Palief Teef.
Palief Teef, absolute Dean Coos.
Police Chief. And he also knows all about Odd Thomas's powers and believes in them and lets him go to crime scenes and has never given any flack for that.
Yeah, and he always does a lot of, like, in hindsight, with 2021 eyes, you look back and you're like, oh, this is just kind of copaganda. And, like, the cops are sort of celebrated for slamming a suspect's head against the car door, which we know that he is he's a child killer, so we're, like, fine with it. But
cool.
Also, like, it's not great. And then he's like, we'll just tell them that you... saw it because you saw the evidence and we'll just plant the evidence. You're like,
ugh. Yeah, this feels kind of weird. But then the funny response to the propaganda in it is that two cops end up being satanic cult members.
Which happens too late, I want to say.
Very late. We don't get the satanic cult talk until very late.
The end.
Yes. I mean, it's like there's a moment where he kind of reaches into a door to hell, sort of.
But we don't
really know that.
And then the wrinkle is that he starts seeing more of these demons called Bodax.
Yes.
And the Bodax are always sort of portents of doom.
Yeah, they feast off of – they're kind of Dementor adjacent.
Sure,
They gravitate. They're invisible to almost everyone except people who can see ghosts. And they gravitate towards people who are about to be involved in like a violent, horrific death. And they feast off that anticipation, I guess.
Yes, exactly. If I couldn't have put it better myself, and myself, that's fine. I'll speak much, but but he sees all these guys attached to Schuler Hemsley, who looks very much like Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black. He's just like a walking loose corpse.
And this is before he dies, by the way, everybody. His choice. Like Schuler Hemsley, I've seen in Waiting for Godot, strangely enough, with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. He was great. He's a really amazing stage actor. Sometimes his character choice walks in film, like for Frankenstein, works perfectly because it's Frankenstein. This is supposed to be a mortal human man, and he walks like there is a full Carvel ice cream cake in the seat of his pants.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
And that, you know, in acting school, a lot of the time we'll say your character should have a secret. Yes. 100% of the time, the secret is that you're pregnant, regardless of gender.
Right.
But his secret was, I have a Carvel ice cream cake in my face.
And it's not sexual. It's just he's just gotten so used to it that he can't walk without a Carvel ice cream cake in the seat of his pants.
It's load bearing.
It's load.
But yeah, and he has like a bleached crown of his head, which I'm sure is a detail. So this is based on a book. Did we say that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Dean Koontz. I'm sure that's a detail from the books, which they call a bleached yarmulke. And it was weird to hear a reference to a yarmulke in a Stephen Sommers movie because he to me is just opposite Jewish.
I mean, I guess we have a Jewish joke in The Mummy where Benny speaks the language of the slaves. Yes. Not great. But yeah.
Yeah. And he's walking around crazy. Mm-hmm. And I thought the reveal would be that he was a zombie, but he just wasn't. He just was walking like that. Yeah, you're right. It was a theater walk in a film.
Yes.
It's great, which I think is good.
I support it.
I can't believe that was Arnold Vosloo. I'm so tickled.
Yeah, comedy
queen.
He is a comedy queen, and everyone give him more of a chance. Where's Arnold Vosloo?
No one is talking about this. I saw in the trivia section on IMDb, which is also a book, that Kevin J. O'Connor was considered for the Shuler Hemsley role. And Kevin J. O'Connor is a frequent Stephen Sommers collaborator. I don't know what happened there.
I also, my other thought was the wonderful Patton Oswalt has a cameo as a character named Ozzy, who I also was like, I'm always delighted to see Patton in anything. But I was like, this feels like it was tailor-made for Kevin J. O'Connor. Where was he?
Yeah, so there's like a real lack of regular Stephen Sommers collaborators in these movies. I mean, except for Arnold Vosloo and Shuler Hemsley. But yeah, it's not with any of his regular producing partners. I think they became ill. A lot of them passed away far before their time, so I don't know if that played into it. I also know that the budget was lower for this, and there were a lot of production issues, which happens to a lot of projects. I'm speaking as if he's listening, because I admire him so deeply.
We hope, I know. We love.
But yeah, it's sort of remarkable for that reason. And also, he hadn't written and directed anything since The Mummy, I think.
Yeah.
The Mummy Returns.
There's something, an element of what is so charming about this movie to me is that it feels like it could have been an 80s movie, which I like. And I think a part of that is it feels like it was all shot in like there's kind of a Gilmore Girls quality to it. It's like we're in this kind of idyllic suburban place where everything is like a little oversaturated, and everything seems a little bit too nice. And yet there are all these ghosts and serial killers and Bodaks out there.
Yeah, it definitely felt big Stranger Things precursor.
Yes. Wow. Anna. Yeah.
The mall. There's a mall involved. There's demons at the mall.
To the point that I almost feel like if they had set this movie in the 80s, it would have been a massive hit.
Wow. Yeah. And the girlfriend scooping ice cream is
more Stranger Things stuff. And also the Bodaks are very Demigorgon-esque.
They're leggy and they're army.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, listen, we're not here to throw, stones at glass houses, but,
we're not,
that's not how that phrase works. I think maybe there's a gas leak in
my home. He who lives near glass houses throw rocks at them. Wait, I have a very important question.
Okay.
Why wasn't the lead gal in this movie is played by Addison Timlin.
Yes.
Someone I've never heard of, who is a fucking star.
Yeah, she's great. She's really, really good.
I mean, being an actor is so crazy. I think like she works consistently. I just feel like she should be so famous.
Right. And she was in Californication, I believe, if IMDb is to be believed. But the funny thing is, who else is in this movie is playing Viola, a waitress at the restaurant that Odd Thomas works at, is Gugu Mbatha-Raw. She was in Loki and is now being set up as like a maybe major antagonist in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Got it. That's good.
So that's really cool to see. She's also very good in this movie. Like, I will say, when you let Stephen Sommers pick a cast – he really gets chemistry between people.
That's a really good point. The chemistry between Anton Yelchin and Addison Timlin is out of control. I just like forgot that they were actors. And when they're crying and kissing and kissing and crying and hugging and kissing and crying, I was just like, look at these two. Look at these teens.
And
look at these post-college teens.
And it is so sad because Anton Yelchin is an absolute, the most like charismatic protagonist imaginable. Like, he's got everything down pat. He's got the comedy of Brendan Fraser. He's got the like the teary eyed empathy of, I mean, who are we, I guess, who am I comparing that to?
Rachel Weisz. He's sort of a combo of Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, there's so much gravitas to him in addition to being like a fun, like tongue-in-cheek kind of rascal.
Yeah, he's such a character actor who's also a leading man. And it is that vulnerable, like when people talk about actors who are comfortable on screen, like you just never feel like he's pushing ever.
Right.
Everything he does is completely natural. And I think that those performers sometimes are overlooked because you never think, wow, look at that actor who's like acting all over the place. But he has that more than almost any other performer.
Yeah. And so like the gist of the plot is that
we keep trying and getting derailed by things we love about it.
And that's a good sign. That's why you should look this up. But he is walking home, Odd Thomas, from solving a recent crime, and he is assaulted by several faceless pre-ghosts. So like, these are not ghosts of people who died. These are ghosts of people who are going to die. So they can talk, but they have no faces. And they're all crowding Odd Thomas, shouting, "Save us, save us, save us." And then a spectral gun shoots all the people, including Odd Thomas.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, there's about to be a huge crime that's about to happen.
And you're so right. They are pre-ghosts that they can talk because their mouths, it's very mummy-ish effect. Where it's very spooky, the mouths, like the skin is kind of starting to seal over their mouths. And as they're yelling for help, they're like continually unsealing and ripping the skin open to yell.
It's very scary.
It's a real nightmare.
And they're all wearing bowling outfits. So he knows.
That works better in a book than a movie. I'll say that.
So he knows that he initially thinks like, oh, this is a shooting that's going to happen at the local bowling alley.
Yes.
And like kind of the long and short of it is he keeps seeing these Bodaks surround Shuler Hensley's character. And he's like, oh, that's going to be the guy who commits the murder. Then that guy shows up dead in his bathtub.
Which, I mean, look, it's happened to some people.
These things happen. Also, he becomes a ghost, Shuler Hensley.
Yes. There's a lot. There's a lot of tracking with that character.
Yes. And I mean, I was kind of surprised that this movie is PG-13 because there's a lot of like Anton Yelchin reaching into corpses and a lot of like showing bugs all over corpses.
Shuler Hensley is covered in yellow mouth goo and they put a goddamn Hollywood cockroach in his mouth. Like a true live cockroach crawls out of his real human mouth.
Yes.
There's no faking of this.
I could not believe. I felt very protective of Shuler in that moment where I was like, can we get a prop? Can we get some, like either a prop mouth or I'm just worried for him. I don't want him to have to put bugs in his mouth.
I have to say he's such a generous performer and he really gives. I don't like that he said yes to that.
The other thing, Anna, about Willem Dafoe is that his kind of arc in this movie is that he's constantly trying to have sex with his wife.
This is one of my favorite things to see is every time he gets a phone call, he is just railing this woman against a refrigerator and cannot catch a break.
Multiple locations. At one point he puts a pillow over her face, which then I was like, I don't like that. But she kind of fights back and it's clear that they have a fun relationship because for a second I was like, this choice feels charged.
Yeah, it's a lot. But, pretty much age appropriate. He's still definitely older than she is, but it was like, that's kind of nice. And I like a sexy Willem Dafoe. I like that he was shirtless in a movie. I think that's fun.
Yeah. Also he like watch Spider-Man from 2002 and this movie, he didn't age in 11 years. Like he looks exactly the same more than a decade apart.
I think the rules are opposite for men with aging than women where like if you're a thin woman and you get older, you're more likely to age.
Yeah.
But men just sort of like there's nothing there. So they just stay the same.
I've also heard that people who have prominent jaw and cheekbones, while it looks severe for their whole life, they are kind of always in the realm of like 45, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
And boy, he is all cheekbone and jawbone, and we applaud him for it.
Yes. And he's in the movie, you know, he's there. Yeah. He's got a lot of lines. It seemed like he had laryngitis for a very long scene where he was yelling.
I thought this too.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also, this shot in Albuquerque, and I'm sure it was very dry and
right.
They were outside for a while.
New Mexico. What a way to shoot a film.
And this is in 2013, which is when Breaking Bad was filming. So they, or in 2011, they were shooting it.
Mm. Oh, but it was delayed. Yeah.
It was delayed. They did some other reshoots and they're on location for a lot of it.
I can't believe this. Anna, are you reading in that the early casting announcements included 50 Cent and Lily so Collins confused. And Tim Robbins?
Yes.
I'm like, who were you?
I don't know. And the 50 Cent character, I don't think was in the movie.
No, Seamus Cocobolo?
Come on.
I think we'd remember that.
I think I'd remember it.
I will also, so Anna, who are the monsters in this film?
The monsters are for sure the Bodaks.
Yes.
Very slippery. A little bit like the, who's Robert Patrick in Terminator 2?
The T-9000?
Not Arnold Schwarzenegger, but the other guy. Right. A little bit that look, like when he's turning into metal.
Yes.
Little Alex Mackey, but very sharp and buggy.
Yeah, slippery soupy.
Yeah, the monster's also Fungus Bob Robertson, they call Shuler Helmsley's character.
Right. He becomes a poltergeist. Very scary.
He pulty. And then, but another thing the Bodaks do is that they stick their little ghost tendrils into people's faces and make them do ghosty shit.
Bad
so they're
things.
Basically possessing people.
I know. That one I didn't quite gauge until I saw it happen like three times. At first I was like, why are they kissing and why does that make people get into car accidents? You know?
Yeah. And yeah, that was a little confusing. I kind of appreciated that the movie didn't try to mythologize them. It didn't try to be like, sometimes bad influences get into our minds and make us do things that are out of character. It was just like, no, there's a demon and it got in a guy's face and he crashed the car.
It's also funny because apparently I'm looking it up. Bodaks are Celtic like ghouls.
Hey,
so
we love that.
I respect that he goes with the name, but it's not like they come from the Emerald Isle. Like we're just, Bodaks are everywhere, but they're inspired by this mythology.
Exactly. And they move like sandworms and tremors, like kind of burrow.
That's right.
They were burrowing over a tile floor, under a tile floor, which I thought was really
cool. Very
scary. And another thing that one of them did that was very Stephen Sommers is that it licked his girlfriend's face, which she couldn't see because she can't see any of this.
Yeah.
But like you see that the mummy, he's gross and kissing on a girl.
Yeah.
You got Van Helsing, the monster kissing on a girl. Definitely elements of that. Excuse me, elements of that in Deep Rising.
Right.
When a gross monster licking on a girl's neck, people gonna scream.
Yeah, we don't like seeing that, but we like seeing that. I don't know why. You know?
I know. I'm sure it has to do with roller coasters and war.
And then the human monsters we come to realize are a satanic cult, but a very small one, comprised of two cops, one dog owner, and Shuler Hemsley.
I could not make heads or tails of this dog owner character.
Yes, that to me was a loose thread a bit.
Really loose. We didn't get a ton of time with this cult. Also, I guess there's two big Rottweilers. They're pretty monstery.
Yeah, they're kind of
maul a lady.
Right, they do.
And
but what's what's the cult trying to do? I remember they say like the cult leader killed his mom and then they want to kill again. So
So there's a part where Anton Yelchin is in this guy's house and he's going through a file drawer that has like the Night Stalker and Charles Manson.
Right.
And then there's a file folder that says Bob Robertson, who's his name. And he opens it and it just has a page a day desk calendar page for August 15th, which is coming up.
Yep.
But it's like 2 days away and it's like, oh, well, he's going to go and be a mass shooter. A big thing that we haven't talked about is how uncomfortable it is that it has themes of mass shootings.
Yeah.
And it came out in 2014. I'm sure part of why it was delayed was the like Dark Knight shootings.
Yeah.
And so the book was written in 2003. So Columbine had just happened.
Oof.
But I don't think it was yet understood that that was going to be
the new such a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a mass shooting was, and it, like, so it was in this uncomfortable zone where it felt really fresh, mm-hmm. but also not established enough that it was understood to be a trope. Like enough right. of it had happened that it felt weird to see considering yeah. the time period. So
that's a really good point, Anna. It also is like the degree to which this is a gun heavy film and a bomb yeah. heavy film, and that it's happening in a mall where everyone is happy and that so many people are being killed. Odd Thomas does manage to save most of the people except for his girlfriend.
Spoiler. Yeah.
Who do get killed.
Yeah. So this movie, it was Dark Knight Rises. That was the Aurora shooting.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So this movie was still in production.
Oh.
And it premiered in the Philippines and then Finland, where it performed really poorly because it was just not promoted at all.
Right. I can see that. Yeah.
It finished the week at number 14 in Finland, which I don't understand
how that's no.
possible.
They've got two movie theaters. I'm yeah, just kidding, Finland. Everybody calm down.
Everyone calm down. They're like, we're calm. but yeah, there were also a couple lawsuits with this movie for not promoting it enough.
Oh, interesting. From
different production companies. So that's part of why it was late. But I'm sure that part of the reason, and it performed extremely poorly in the United States.
I know. Like, I never heard of it. I didn't hear.
Shocking.
I didn't see a poster for it.
Not at all. Not at all. The only reason I knew about it is because it's the most recent thing on Stephen Sommers' IMDb page, which is something I look at constantly to see if there's something else.
But I was really feeling for the characters, which is an accomplishment in a horror comedy.
Yes, it was so emotional and also really funny. I felt very comfortable watching these characters.
Yes.
It really, I would love if this were a Netflix series, but I can't picture anybody else playing that part. And apparently he was Stephen Sommers' one and only choice for this part.
Yeah, I can see why. And it is part of the genius of Stephen Sommers is to identify who an audience is really going to latch onto. And I think like the misfire of Van Helsing is largely due to banking on the chemistry between Hugh Jackman and Richard Roxburgh.
yes, you're so right.
Which I do think is more viable than the chemistry between Hugh and Kate Beckinsale. But
yes, I
think
this I think that their chemistry was blunted because of how tight her corset was. I'll say that till the day I die. No one will know what I was talking about.
Yeah, and the brittleness of her curls. I think that also had an effect.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard. You need loose hair.
Anna, I am bummed to ask because I know the answer. Do you know what Ebert said?
So Ebert had passed away by this point.
Oh my God.
But
well.
Ebert still reviewed. I know this was the first Ebert review. What Ebert say after his passing.
Oh.
Let me see. Is that true? Well, somebody else reviewed it for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it came out in 2014. So he was gone.
Brian Tallarico.
Brian Tallarico is a great, he does a lot of reviews. He gave it a star and a half.
Wow.
And he writes, after reading Dean Koontz's on, I said it again.
That's fine.
After reading Dean Koontz's Odd Thomas on a Vegas vacation, I thought to myself that it would someday make a fun film, perhaps even a franchise, as it had been in book form. Stephen Sommers has proven me wrong.
Aww. Oh.
Mean. Okay, I disagree with a lot of this
yeah.
review. He says, Odd has a girlfriend named Story Llewellyn. Yes, seriously. But Sommers' adaptation of Koontz's book is so reliant on the twisting supernatural narrative that we learn nothing and care not a bit about the Odd Stormy dynamic.
No.
That was such a bedrock of the source. Odd and Stormy are destined to be together forever. Surely a tough task for a casting agent. But Andrew, get this. One that's completely bobbled here as Yelchin and Timlin have zero chemistry.
I'm going to throw a paperweight down a laundry chute.
Sir?
That is outrageous, Brian. I want you to retract that.
Retract it, Brian. Retract it, Brian.
Retract it.
Oh, my God.
Everybody, that's the new TikTok phrase. Get on board.
Get on board. It's very specific. oh, man. I guess it's hard when the film reviewer is someone who loved the book.
Yeah.
It's like people who love the book never like the movie.
And what bad luck to have just found an adult man who read this book.
Seems impossible. I do think it's time to jump to our favorite segment, which I'm going to send you my list.
Oh, I've got a list too. We can do back and forth. Okay, good.
We'll go back and forth. I'm worried I have too many again. But guys, we're going to talk about what's gay about Odd Thomas.
A shocking amount. There is actually a lot that's gay.
As I said before, it's a weird mix of nothing and everything that's gay about this, which is very typical for a Stephen Sommers movie. It's just like this heightened performance of heterosexuality mixed with the supernatural that makes it simultaneously not gay at all and everything is gay.
Yeah, if you put one queer thing in the laundry, it's all coming out queer, baby.
It's all coming out a little queer. Okay. You want to start?
Yes. Watching your gorgeous mom behave recklessly with a knife.
Yes. A long story to explain your weird name.
Yes.
The first thing you tell people is how crazy your mom was.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman being carted off to an asylum in a straitjacket and a black mini dress.
That's gay. Anna, we have to talk about that. This flashback in which he's like, I got this gift from my mom. And then it is truly like a Kristen Davis from Sex and the City lookalike with a knife being like, being carted off in a straitjacket.
Sometimes women are insane.
The most Real Housewives looking person being put in a straitjacket is very gay.
It also, I actually really love and respect that. I think a lot of the times qualities that are celebrated in men are pathologized in women. Take my class.
Yes.
It's fine.
Welcome to Barnard. Okay. I have another one, Anna.
Okay.
Walking on water at a pool party, but nobody notices.
Yes. Having a cardboard cut out of Elvis in your home.
Dissolving into flower petals at a pool party, but nobody notices.
Yes. Loudly shit-talking somebody at a pool party.
The line, son, you so complicate my life.
Squirting pink milk into a glass from a distance.
The line, he ran, and naturally, I gave chase.
Willem Dafoe being glib at a diner.
Telling a twink to save you while you carry him to his bed.
Gugu Mbatha Raw having a prophetic dream.
Using peach shampoo.
A dead Little League coach picking his nose with a severed arm as a joke for your benefit at the mall. That's gay.
That is gay.
Oh, we were supposed to be saying that's gay after it.
Telling a straight girl named Stormy that you'd die for her. That's gay.
That's gay. That is gay. Being in a super healthy, respectful relationship with a partner you admire as an equal. That's gay.
Yeah.
It's very queer.
Very queer. Being incredibly good at chopping vegetables. That's gay.
It's very gay. Bringing your psychic boyfriend an ice cream cone and wedge heels is gay.
Intercepting a kiss meant for Willem Dafoe is gay.
Deeply gay. A relationship where both parties work in food service. That's every gay relationship.
The line, they want violence, carnage, and terror, and they want to watch. That's gay.
That's gay. Riding a Vespa chasing a doomed man into the desert. That's gay. that guy has the most demons on him I've ever seen. I better go to the desert with him.
Oh my God, you're right. Dying suddenly after loudly singing such a beautiful girl.
A toilet in the living room. That's straight.
That is very straight. Yes.
In the murder house, there's a toilet in the living room.
The line, I hope you didn't come here to dick up my evening.
Jesus. Who says that?
Willem Dafoe.
God.
Wow.
This one is late. This is from earlier, but being kissed on the forehead by a ghost in a sundress.
Oh yeah, that is gay. Yeah, that's going to a drag show. That's going to drag bingo. The line, Anna, this line. I see you left your hormone spigot running, griddle boy. Crank it shut. This is church.
Unbelievable. That, yeah, I had calling your boyfriend griddle boy is very gay.
I can't believe the term hormone spigot. That is the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It just paints the picture of a penis where the hole in the end of it is the size and width of the entire shaft.
Yes, and an unreliable drip. I mean, that is ugh.
Oh, God. Hoarding exotic birds is gay. Oh. Fisting, Fisting a cursed hole in the wall is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Gay. Scooping blue ice cream while you're on a Bluetooth headset phone call is straight.
Yes. Eating ice cream on a bench in a mall with your boyfriend is also straight.
Yes. Criticizing Willem Dafoe's barbecue skills is straight.
Arriving at a bowling alley and saying, "Why did I drive here?" is gay.
Your partner having an old English birth name but going by a Kardashian child's name is gay.
Being terrified by new work uniforms is gay.
Having a picnic in a belfry is gay.
The line, "I think Bob Green might want to do more than hook some balls," is gay.
Shooting a movie in Albuquerque is gay.
Having a charged, steamy reaction with a hot cop who has the word "pod" tattooed on his forearm is straight and it is gay.
It's straight and gay.
Yeah.
Okay, this one is specifically gay Republican. Believing in ghosts but still being friends with cops is gay.
That is log cabin gay for sure.
Yes.
Finding a dead body in your tub and being fine with it till it barfs on you is gay.
I know. I was like, there is a Party Monster connection here, but I'm not gonna make it.
This is Party Monster. Oh wow. This movie could be called Party Monster.
Yes. Monster Party also would be good.
Very good.
Seeking refuge in a sacristy is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe taking a work call during sex with an age-appropriate woman is gay.
Willem Dafoe wearing
dog tags during sex with an age-appropriate woman is straight.
Yes, and the dog tags are huge.
Massive.
The line, "Don't look back, be strong for him as you drive away from your boyfriend on a Vespa," is gay.
Patton Oswalt wearing a military-style beret is something. I don't know if it's gay.
That is something.
That's definitely something to think about.
Watching your friend kiss a ghost who then disappears into butterflies is gay.
That's good. A female extra in her 40s staring directly at the camera is definitely queer. There was a woman in one scene in the mall was wearing glasses. She's blonde and she is looking, she's burning the lens completely. Yes. It's really nice.
I honestly fell asleep for a moment watching the movie and I woke up again and I thought I had missed the introduction of a character because the woman was looking with such intent at the camera that I was like, there is no way this person can't be, at least a day player.
She's the queen of Albuquerque, but it's a non-speaking part.
Starting a satanic cult with your three closest male friends, but then wondering if this is just a plot to kill one of their moms is gay.
Oh my God. Having a nightmare about a bowling alley is gay.
That is very gay. Okay. And I have one more, and this is a straight one.
Okay.
Walking to Las Vegas is straight.
That is straight. Wearing like a Vibram five finger.
Yeah. Shoe. That's the straightest way you could go to Vegas, to walk there.
Oh my God. You're right. We have one rung below that. Is like those is a helicopter, but
right, that is true. Oh
God, I think I have like 10 left.
Great,
none of them are good, but I'll do all of them. Okay, imploring Gugu Mbatha-Raw to visit her grandmother is gay. Crying on a Vespa because of ghosts is gay. Running barefoot in a strapless top is gay. Loading a gun in a t-shirt and lacy underwear is straight and gay.
Yes,
your last words being "We are going to have words" is gay.
Oh.
Asking Shuler Hensley if he's comfortable putting a movie cockroach in his mouth is gay. Demons descending upon his zoomies is straight. And yelling, "I got a grinder," at a mall parking lot is gay.
How did I miss that one? That's amazing.
There we go.
Wow, there's a lot gay about this movie, everybody.
This is a gay movie and you should watch it.
Anna, I just can't say how much joy revisiting Stephen Sommers films has been for me.
He's given... People use this phrase a lot. He has given us so much.
Yes. And he has. I know we've laughed a lot. We've ragged on him a lot, but this is a person who is good at what he does. And we shouldn't have him just be remembered as making like box office bombs because he made The Mummy for us, everybody. And that the impact of that is immeasurable.
He gave us so much. The impact that that has.
And to be able, like, I think there are very few movies that our generation has that are beloved for being so cheesy, you know?
Yes.
And like, I think Van Helsing is one of those films. And I think that so many of his films are ones that you might laugh at. You might say like, oh, this is goofy, but you will have a good time watching a Stephen Sommers movie.
I definitely think about it every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So Stephen, if you're out there, we hope you're well. And yeah, we're big fans. Thank you for the laughs. Thank you for the gay. Thank you for the mummies.
Thank you for all of those things. And Andrew, thank you so much for doing this with me. It's such a dream come true.
Anna, I will do this every damn year. This is a real joy.
I am ready for it. Assuming we get more years, I'd certainly spend them doing this.
I know. That's very fair. Podcast or no, we will always be watching Stephen Sommers movies. And we hope you are too. And yeah, gentle listeners, if you have other like franchises or ideas for future maybe movie series, if this was something you all were into, let us know and we'll think about it.
Right in.
Right
in. Drop a line.
Chicken come in.
Chicken come in. ScaryStoryPod@gmail.com. Get in touch. You can send us your scary stories. We'll read them on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ScaryStory_pod.
And one more thing you could do.
Get out.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod is executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Produced by Tracy Soren. Original theme music by Chris Ryan. Cover art by Bats Langley. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.